When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Hello, welcome along. It's Pod on the Tyne again. We're all together today in the bowels of the lovely Gosforth Civic Theatre here in Leafy NE3 for a little bonus Q&A show. How are we doing, chaps? George Calkins, yeah, you all right?
I'm very, very well. Yeah, it's nice, as you kind of put it a few minutes ago, it's nice to be in this dressing room not shitting ourselves at the prospect of immediately going on stage in front of a live audience, which is something we would like to do in the... quite near future.
Most definitely, yes.
But yeah, I'm good. Still on a relative high after the first game of the season. Do think that was an important performance from Newcastle. And yeah, here we are with our third new show of this era. Exciting.
Chris Woff, how are you? Have you recovered from being offered a vegetarian sausage yet this morning or not?
I mean... I'm having PTSD now that you just mentioned that, but yes, that was, I did try to order a breakfast sandwich and they suggested vegetarian sausage, which obviously I did not take, but what I was wondering is, George, is this technically within your grounds? Is this in the grounds of Colkin Manor? Because it is like 200 yards from your house, and I know that your estate stretches far and wide.
Yeah, I do charge exorbitant rents for my, what's the opposite of a tenant, for my tenants, yes. And so this is effectively my land, yeah, yeah. So I should probably charge you a small fee for being here.
Well, you make sure you have proper sausages for next time we're here.
Okay, yeah. Never seen a man looking more affronted than the vegetarian sausage request that came to you.
Yes, anyway, let's crack on, chaps, shall we? Don't forget, we do have a new email address, podonthetyne@gmail.com, and please do not send messages to our old address, @theathletic.com, because we're not there anymore. @podonthetyne on Twitter, X, and Blue Sky. Should we crack on?
Let's do it.
Let's crack on. Questions, here we go. Love the pod. What's the reason for going independent? And what does it all really mean? That's from Craig.
Well, I mean, what does it all really mean? That's a very, I mean, that's a big question, isn't it?
Existential.
Existential, yeah. Well, on this, what I would like to say is that my people very clearly told The Athletic 12 months ago that that would be my final season. I'm just joking. Yeah, it's a sort of mutual decision, really, between us and The Athletic. We want to be more flexible. We want to be more ambitious. We want to do different things and have more control of our own destiny. And yet, sort of just to repeat what we've said before, we've had really amazing help from The Athletic. Chris and I, of course, still write for them, very proud to do that. And they've allowed us to take the name. They've allowed us to take this this feed. The reason you're still listening to this without having to go searching for us is because we have that. So we've been given a great deal of help on our way. We're really proud of our association with The Athletic. Been there since the start. And yeah, we just want to be able to kind of move a bit quicker, react when things happen. We want to do more live shows. We want to do more shows full stop. If you listen to our match day offering at the weekend, we want to do bits and bobs like that. So it's really just about being more in control of our destiny and sort of doing what we want as and when.
And this kind of bonus pod that we're doing now is going to be something that we do in the future, hopefully behind some sort of subscriber wall or something like that, where we can ask people if they want to join us and pay a little bit of money to hear some extra content. This is the kind of thing we're going to do in the future, Chris, isn't it?
Exactly. And I mean, for example, if we had launched early in the summer, if and when Newcastle make a sort of big signing, then again, that's something that potentially we want to be reacting to more going forward. And that could be in just in terms of it might just be a sort of 10, 15 minute bonus episode on the free feed. But then also at some point, yeah, if it was to be of interest, if people would want to subscribe and actually pay money to listen to us, which is something that I struggle to believe, but apparently that might be the case. Yeah. Then
and just to sort of make the point on that, obviously when we were working with The Athletic under The Athletic's banner, which was, of course is owned by the New York Times, that comes with its own budget. It's like, if we were doing that, we're not going to be doing it to earn ourselves millions and millions of pounds. It does cost money to produce podcasts, and so that would just help us on our way, really.
Yes, absolutely. It all feeds back into the show and helps the show. Also, here's a question from Tony. Happy to have you back in my pod life. Will twice a week shows be back? Also, any live shows coming up? So we're hoping for a live show, aren't we?
Yeah, so I think we've sort of partly addressed that going forward, hopefully we will have live shows, maybe on a sort of slightly more regular basis than previously, if possible, if it works. But as we've already said, now we're independent, there's also a greater risk attached to that. So we have to see how these things work going forward. In terms of twice weekly shows, we did that in the last Champions League campaign. We will do more regular shows. It's not necessarily prescriptive that we're going to do.
We're already doing it, Tony.
Yeah.
Well, exactly, yeah. But it's not necessarily prescriptive in terms of we'll only do one this week or two next week. In theory, we will have a lot of match day reaction or match day specific podcasts. We will also have the main podcast in the middle of the week. But as for example, later in the week, we intend to do a short show and reaction to the Champions League format, which going forward may be another offering which goes behind a paywall. But equally, sometimes we will just do these bonus episodes. We don't necessarily have hard and fast, this is what we have to do going forward. We have more flexibility. Yeah. We'll try and test things over the course of the next few months. So please give us feedback on what you like, what you want to hear more of, less of. And yeah, it's not necessarily going to be a set format, but you will be hearing a lot more from us.
And just to repeat what we said at the top, thank you so much to Gosford Civic Theatre for actually hosting us. We've said we're here, but we also have to say thank you very much for them. They've been brilliantly supportive partners of us so far, and really kind of them to let us do this show all together with Ollie, producer Ollie too, which is lovely.
Fantastic. Right, let's get into the meat of the questions. Alexander Isak, Michael's asked, is tapping up a thing of the past? All clubs seem to be preparing deals with players before making a bid to the selling club.
Yeah, this is really interesting, actually. If I can sort of take a step back and talk about a different deal, and that would be the Brian Mbeumo deal. So he was Newcastle's top target, one of Newcastle's top targets in that position, and somebody that they'd been looking at for a long time. Now, when it came to the nub of the matter, Newcastle United did not submit a bid to Brentford. And why did they not do that? Because by that point, having been kind of informed that Mbeumo would be open to moving to them, at that stage, it was then became clear that he only wanted to go to Manchester United. So I think people sort of assume or think that, you know, a club is interested in a player, therefore they make a bid. The bid is either accepted or rejected, then they talk personal terms. In reality, when it comes to big transfers, that isn't the way it seems to work anymore, that clubs don't make bids for players unless they know that the player will be receptive to that bid. That is very much a grey area in terms of the legalities of football and the way things should be done. I suppose it absolutely makes sense. You don't waste time on bidding for a player unless you know that player will be receptive. I don't know if Chris has got anything to add on that.
Well, yeah, I mean, if you go back sort of 20 years, there was the famous Ashley Cole case when this was something that came up, and it does seem to be almost now that as George said, you almost get your ducks in a row before transfer happens. Maybe that's because of the value of them and how much work goes into them beforehand. But you just have to look at the same situation or a very similar parallel, which is happening at Brentford at the moment with Johan Visser. Newcastle know he's desperate to come and know that deal can happen. So is it right? Possibly not. But that's the way that sort of football works, and you find it with lots of. I think just about every single deal now, you almost get surprise from a club if you go to the club first before sort of the agreement is on with the player side, or at least, yes, if there's several clubs going for it. But take, for example, the Liam Delap situation this summer as well. That was slightly different in the sense that there was a release clause, but basically all of the discussions and negotiations were with Delap and his people. And then the agreement was with, right, Chelsea's where I want to go. And then Chelsea and Ipswich get into negotiations. Yeah. I mean, it was the negotiations were sort of straightforward in one sense because it was a release clause, but there's still more to it than that. So that is the modern way. I'm sure there are still parameters in terms of how far you can go with that. And ultimately, it will depend, as is happening so far with Brentford and Newcastle and their respective situations, the power, or at least some power, still lies with the club. And you may get an agreement with the player, but then you've still got to reach an agreement with the club.
And obviously, the bigger picture here, or smaller picture, I don't know, but it's about Alexander Isak and what's going on with him. And you know, if Michael is kind of making a point about that, then obviously there is a great deal of irritation around Newcastle about Liverpool and the way they've gone about things. They do feel that this has unsettled Alexander Isak. And, you know, I'm not making specific allegations or saying specific things about Liverpool, but, you know, there is that sense that his behaviour, the way Liverpool have gone about things, those two things are kind of connected. And so, you know, it does feel like that's part of a bigger picture. And yeah, there is definitely some, a great deal of irritation on Newcastle's behalf about the way Liverpool have gone about things.
Ted wants to know why gentlemen's agreements even exist rather than being written into the contract itself. And he has a theory on that, apparently.
I'd be interested to hear his theory. I mean, gentleman's agreement is sort of a catch-all term, which is almost a journalistic term, which is used. We have a lot of these where people just say that. And I mean, I suppose the problem with a gentleman's agreement, or whatever this term is that you want to use, is that if, particularly if it isn't written down, then people may have different interpretations of what it is or what it necessarily means. But also sort of circumstances change. So you just rewind to partly how it came to this situation with Isak in the first place, is that there was discussions internally when Amanda Staveley was there suggesting that Alexander Isak may get an extended contract or an improved contract going forward. But then the situation changes, the hierarchy changes at Newcastle, and a gentleman's agreement, which is a wrong term to use when if it's also been Amanda Staveley involved, but an agreement that is in place is given, and then the people that change, is that from the club that the agreement was there in the first place, or was were the discussions held on a personal capacity? I mean, it's the same seemingly at Brentford. The suggestion, or it has been reported, is that Visser felt that he was told last summer he could move on. Yeah, yeah. And so why do they exist? I think partly because writing it into a contract may actually negatively affect a price or a bidding war that Newcastle may have. If they'd had that agreement with Alexander Isak and put it into actual contractual form, maybe for a start, Isak doesn't want to sign that contract because he doesn't want to extend his stay at Newcastle any further. But also, if Newcastle sign it and it's a gentleman's agreement at X price, but then in the course of the year that's happened, Isak scores 20-odd Premier League goals, therefore Newcastle feel they can get more money from it. It's sort of, I suppose, it's built on trust, and you get
but you can transpose this into any walk of life, surely. I mean, it's like, Chris, your boss says, I want you to write more about sausages and less about football. Your boss then gets changed, and you know, the new boss says something else. I mean, I don't think that's like a sinister thing. I don't think that's a bad thing. It's like, please, I mean, again, if you're a footballer, you know, you could you have a manager that's saying to a player, okay, your great strength is tackling, so focus on that. Another manager comes in and sees a different strength in the same player and asks them to concentrate on that or work on that. I mean, I don't think it's a sinister thing. It's just that when it comes to this and Alexander Isak, you're talking about a £150 million asset, and it feels a bit clumsy. But again, take a bigger step back from this. The thing that is a real mess has been the amount of churn at the top of Newcastle United, which hasn't helped consistency approach in anything, whether it's the transfer market, whether it's things like contracts, whether it's just decision-making at that level of the club. And, you know, a lot of what's happened at Newcastle this summer is not about, you know, is not necessarily Newcastle's fault, but there has been a real degree of mess at that level of the club, which hasn't helped.
Another couple of very quick sort of examples is when Newcastle signed Odysseus Flakodimos, at least somebody in the conversations with Flakodimos's people, his camp, suggested he would have a good chance of competing with Nick Pope for a starting place. That wasn't something that Eddie Howe committed to, and then going forward it didn't prove to be the case. Martin Dubravka in January, when he signs a new contract, he signs that on the proviso, A, that he's going to have a chance to compete for the number one jersey. Quite quickly Nick Pope was re-established, but also on the proviso he could leave this summer if an offer comes in, and it did, and so he left. So that's an example of where it has actually worked in practice. So it swings and roundabouts, I suppose.
Let's have a little delve into conspiracy corner here, chaps, because there's been a lot of that flying around. Let's open the conspiracy cupboard. Are redacted and redacted paid by clubs to promote / unsettle players?
Okay, so this is sort of getting into the world of journalism and transfer stories. So, like, I don't think it's particularly useful or desirable. And I'm not going to talk about how other people do their jobs. What I am going to do, though, is give you a bit of insight into the way that we work at The Athletic, and that includes everybody who works for The Athletic. Chris and I, colleagues across clubs, David Ornstein, absolutely everybody. We have incredibly high standards of reporting. Now, what I mean by that is we don't talk to a manager or a chairman or a player or an agent and just repeat what they say and turn that into a news story. Everything that we write and publish has to be double sourced at least. So if an agent tells you something, for example, you then have to get it checked out by somebody else. I'll give you an example. This time last year, or not too far away this time last year, I did something on Anthony Gordon, and I was told that after the summer of uncertainty, I was told that Newcastle were going to start talks with Anthony Gordon about a new contract. Now, I wasn't allowed to write that story until I'd also got it checked out from Anthony Gordon's side as well. So, in other words, it wasn't just propaganda on the club's behalf that they were going to start talks with Anthony Gordon, which was obviously what they wanted to do. So that's a little insight. So nothing that we write is written in isolation. It has to be checked out by two sources. The other thing is, when it comes time to write, we give clubs, so if we're talking about one club or two clubs in a story, so say, for example, you're writing a story that involves Newcastle and Liverpool, we give those clubs a right of reply. We tell them in advance that we're writing a story. So I'm just saying that to transfers are incredibly difficult to get to the bottom of because you have so many competing agendas. Chris and I wrote something 2 or 3 weeks ago about Alexander Isak to really ram home this point that there are so many different versions of the truth. If you talk to an agent, you'll get one version. If you talk to a player, you'll get a version. If you talk to a manager, you'll get one version. You've got two different clubs. You've got different agendas within the same club.
Yeah.
It's very, very difficult to work out the truth. But anyway, I wanted to explain what our standards of reporting are.
Just quickly to expand on the standards of reporting is mainly because earlier in the summer, there was quite a lot of frustration when I was writing, so I contribute to the transfer deal sheet, which is a weekly during the summer or during a transfer window piece in The Athletic where the sort of biggest clubs are covered in terms of their business and what's happening. And obviously nothing was happening in early June, so the information seemed fairly similar week on week. But the transfer deal
I remember sheet, this very well on Twitter. Christian, you know nothing, Chris. Yes,
well, exactly.
Stop typing the same thing.
But it is one of our best performing stories, but it is also the bane of my life. And the reason it's the bane of my life is because even then, at that point when it seems like nothing's happening, every single thing that goes into that has to be at least double sourced and has to go to the club. Every single bit that goes into that piece at the start of the week, I send across to Newcastle United, and they have the opportunity from their point of view to come back on it. If I mention another club, for example, Newcastle and Brentford are in negotiations over Johan Visser, we go to Brentford on that. The amount of names and stories that we could have put in there across this summer because it's come from an agent or it's come from one club or another, and we haven't because it hasn't met those standards, we end up removing things and we don't put them in. It's like, I get why some people say, oh, it seems pared back, but that's because there's a certain level of reporting standard which says it's at the top of that article. So yeah, I just... Yeah, the deal sheet is very much the bane of my life, so I just wanted to mention that. Although it is very important, and I understand why we do it.
Yeah, fair play. Getting a striker in. Somebody has asked, I haven't got a name against this one, but supporters think the club only focuses on one player at a time. Like, if Wissa doesn't work out, they'll then move on to the next one and start from scratch. How many irons do they actually have in the fire at any given time?
Yeah, well, I've had people inside...
Flashbacks to Lee Charnley here.
Yes, again, back to, as I mentioned on the podcast last week, that if there's one club who can deal with not having an executive structure, historically it was Newcastle. But there has been pushback from quite a few people on Newcastle this, because there have been suggestions that they have only been able to work on one deal. There was a suggestion at one stage that they were only able to work on a right-sided forward, and then it was, oh, well, now we'll move on to a goalkeeper. Yeah. And they've always refuted that. There's been multiple deals gone on at once. James Trafford had dragged on for months, and obviously it didn't actually happen in the end, but that was the deal that was being worked on as of the... was happening. So in terms of irons at the fire at the moment, Newcastle are in negotiations with multiple players and clubs in terms of for the striker position. Now at the minute they're only looking for one that could pivot to two. They are exploring the possibility they may need a second in case Alexander Isak leaves, but it's not just Johan Visser and Brentford. That's been going on for 3 weeks. We haven't spoken to others.
Yeah.
They're like Jorg Strand Larsen at Wolves. They've looked at Samu at Porto. They've had Gonçalo Ramos at PSG put towards them. There's been so many. They've obviously pushed hard for Benjamin Sesko previously, Ekitike previously. So in terms of exact number, I can't give you that because I don't know exactly, but it certainly at one stage this summer, I would say you were talking half a dozen deals, if not more, being balanced at once across multiple positions. Now, that doesn't mean that all of them are in the stage of we are very close to reaching an agreement in terms of fees on this. It may be that you switch focus and prioritise and get intense negotiations about one player. Like last week was Jacob Ramsey. There were quite intense negotiations over those few days. And other things maybe get put on the back burner for a while. But that is also perfectly normal.
Can I throw a name at you, Chris, and see if you know anything? I love the lad at, is it Stuttgart, Waldemade?
Yeah, I checked this one out yesterday because there was a lot of links. I'm told I'm told there's nothing in that as of this stage in terms of Newcastle going from.
Thanks for destroying
But apparently he's not for sale as well, Stuttgart have said.
Fair play.
There is like a little sort of logistical thing to point out as well, which is that if you're committing to spend, say, £30 million on James Trafford, there's then a knock-on effect to how much you can spend on a forward or a centre-half.
Yeah,
if you're committing to do a loan for Aaron Ramsdale, which doesn't cost anything up front, that gives you more money.
It did cost a fee up front.
Pardon?
They paid a loan fee, so.
A loan fee? I know, but don't be a dickhead. We have a no dickhead policy on this podcast, which does make me wonder how you ever got into it in the first place. How stroppy get? You paid a loan fee. I know, but it's not the same as £30 million, is it? No. And so there's a knock-on effect to how much they can then spend on other positions. So it's like you've got these sums being done all at the same time, which then has knock-on effects elsewhere.
Yeah, there's lots of moving parts, isn't there? Yeah. And I think if we know one thing about Chris is that he will be a pedant if he gets the chance. So yeah, that's fair. That question was from Terence, by the way. We've got the name for that now. This one's from Pete. Does Visser's petulant behaviour indicate he may be a bad fit for Howe's squad?
My immediate reaction to that would be Alexander Isak is acting in a very similar way, if not even more militant, and he has been in Howe's squad for the last 3 years and has been the most important player. So in terms of just saying, is he a bad fit? The Visser situation, there are parallels with. I think the difference with Alexander Isak is that Isak is already at a club or in the Champions League, and whereas Visser is at a stage in his career, he's 28, 29, I think that he... or the impression it's given is he feels this is his one big chance for a move now. If he's going to, the opportunity is there to move to a Champions League club. He's given Brentford a good few years. I do have slight concerns in terms of the way that maybe he has acted, but not in terms of I think he would be a bad fit for Eddie Howe's squad. They've done their due diligence in terms of on his character and what he does. There are other players who they have been heavily linked to this summer who they are less keen on moving for reasons and revolving around personality. Visser is not one of them. Do I think that the way he's acted has been ideal? No. I think he could have potentially handled himself better. Certainly Alexander Isak could have handled himself better. But I don't think it's a complete red mark against him and therefore he shouldn't be signed.
You could flip it the other way and say that in this summer of Newcastle's best player wanting out. Here you've got a player who desperately wants to come in.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's possibly stretching it a bit. I mean, I think I agree with Chris that there's a way to go about things. I think the thing that really hurts or the thing that really upsets about Alexander Isak, it's fine if you make the decision you want more money, if you make the decision you want to move to a different club. You know, Liverpool are in a position where they're going to challenge for the Champions League, you know, challenge for the Premier League title, and they're ahead of Newcastle in those terms. That's okay, but there's a way of going about things, and that the way he's gone about things shows a lack of respect to the club that has really put him on the map. So I think, you know, do I like what Visser's doing? No, not really. But yeah, I mean, he is showing that he wants to move to Newcastle,
yeah.
And in that sense, you know, you can't have enough of that. But yeah.
We've got lots of people asking about the loan market as well, namely Ivan Toney or Rasmus Højlund. Understand Ivan Toney's unlikely as he can't really return to the UK inside 2 years without incurring a massive tax bill, apparently. But what about the loan market, Chris? Is any...
At the moment, that's not something that seems to be top of the agenda. I'm sure as we get closer to deadline, and if Newcastle, say if the Visser deal doesn't happen and Newcastle need a striker, or if they need two strikers, then it is always something they consider. Eddie Howe prefers not to go in the loan market where possible, unless it is with a loan with an obligation or with an option like Ramsdale. Højlund was someone who I think was talked about internally as of last week. That wasn't a one that we're necessarily going to explore. I wouldn't rule it out, but Newcastle would like a permanent solution where possible.
Joe said, we simply can't end the window without a striker. It's unfathomable, which isn't technically a question. So, chaps, is it unfathomable?
I'm not sure I can say that word. So, I agree it is. I mean, they just can't. I mean, look, I was at Villa. It was a really good performance in lots of ways. Anthony Gordon, it's quite interesting. Anthony Gordon talking afterwards on TNT Sports saying that at some stage in his career, he thinks he'll end up in a more central role.
Yeah, that was interesting.
He
enjoyed it, didn't he?
Well, he said he enjoyed it. And, you know, again, we can talk about Anthony Gordon and the year that he's had. It's great to see him with that sort of relish and, you know, pressing hard and running hard and, you know, back to his best with his head up and with a better, much better body language. Really, really impressive, really encouraging. But, I mean, you know, you're talking about taking out 20 guaranteed league goals from the team. They need a focal point. That would be, you know, again, it's not as simple as saying 16 shots, only three on target with a striker on the pitch, they would have won the game. But they were, you know, it's the evidence is pretty clear. They needed a focal point. They still need that. They need somebody capable of putting the ball in the net. They also just need options. I mean, it's like if you're going to play with a false nine, fine. You know, other teams have done that and done it very well. But you do need options. And at the minute, apart from Willasula, you know, Newcastle just don't have options.
Chris, Andy's wondering why Willasula hasn't played more at number nine. At least he has the mentality of a goal getter. Is this something to do with Howe maybe not quite trusting him yet to play, start from, you know, start games and from a tactical point of view?
Yeah, and I mean, there's been a big push this summer for if Newcastle are to bring in a striker, that needs to be somebody who is at least ready to start in the Premier League. And Willasula has yet to start a Premier League game for Newcastle. He came on, he scored his first Premier League goal towards the back end of last season, took it well, played a lot in pre-season, and he's always a willing runner. He always puts in so much endeavour. Actually, when he appeared towards the back end of last season, most of the time he appeared out wide, usually out wide right. And I think that Newcastle see that sort of flexibility with him. I'm not sure I necessarily agree or I've seen enough of what Andy says about him having the mentality of a goal-getter. I think he hasn't necessarily shown that ruthless streak yet. Has he had the opportunities? No. But clearly, Howe doesn't yet trust him in that role. He isn't seen as a frontline strike option. And therefore, Anthony Gordon has chosen ahead of him as a false nine. He will get minutes across the course of the season as things stand. And certainly, unless Newcastle sign one, possibly two strikers, I can't see him going out alone either, even if he needs game time. But the frustrating thing about Willasula is he has all the raw ingredients, but raw is the key word. And it's been the word we've used for him for the last 14 months. And it's still there. There still needs significant refinement to what he can offer, and I don't think there's been enough of that yet. But if he's going to learn it anywhere, I think it'll be under Eddie Howe and these coaches.
I think one thing I've noticed about Eddie Howe is he likes his players to be fully dialed in tactically, doesn't he? And Willasula's very much a free spirit at the minute, isn't he? And I think, you know, if he was a bit more in tune with the way Eddie Howe wants to play, maybe he'd be getting more game time.
Yeah, and I think having a striker come in of more experience, someone like Johan Visser, someone he could learn off as well, I think that would be of benefit to him.
Definitely. Executive leadership, we've had several thousand requests like this particular one from Sean. How imminent is the CEO appointment? Because it's been imminent for quite some time, and I'm beginning to wonder if imminent means what I think it does.
This takes us back to the pre-takeover days, doesn't it? Do you remember that? The word imminent. Yep. Red flags and imminent. Sean, the appointment of a new CEO by Newcastle United is imminent.
Excellent. There we go. Well, I'm glad we've cleared that up.
You know, we know who it is, like barring absolute last-minute disasters or hitches, whatever. It's David Hopkinson, who's worked for Real Madrid in the past. He's also worked in the United States for big, big organisations and in Canada, but like Madison Square Gardens. You know, I think that's an exciting appointment. It's a forward-thinking appointment. But it can't happen soon enough. You know, there are logistical issues. I'm saying this a lot, take a step back. It's now 11 months since Darren Eales told everybody that very sadly he had blood cancer and would be stepping down. It is too long to wait for this appointment to have been made. Yes, be rigorous. Yes, be process-driven, that other awful phrase that we hear all the time. But it's wrong that Newcastle have been left in this position.
Yeah.
And it can't come soon enough. You know, really looking forward to getting someone back at the top of the club. You know, the other thing to say about this summer, the difficulties of this summer, it has again been left to Eddie Howe to take the brunt of questions. Not all of them under his remit. People should have been coming out offering him support. It shouldn't just be him. I'm not saying that would have been David Hopkinson in this circumstance. You know, we also don't have a sporting director, of course, but like there has been an absence of leadership, and you know, the end of that can't come soon enough.
I thought it was interesting on that point that Jamie Rubin came out on social media over the weekend and basically he almost apologized for the fact that he hadn't communicated more as a leadership, and that they want to going forward. And I suppose, and Jamie Rubin, Jacobo Solis, who are both on the board, have been heavily involved in a lot of the negotiations this summer, but they are not actually day-to-day employees that Newcastle as a sporting director or a CEO should be. And there is that vacuum of leadership, and I think that's partly other people have had to step up and have been put in positions which they really have been just left thrown in the deep end, really. And I think they've performed very well in the end. It's been a testing summer. It's been difficult in many circumstances. In terms of the word imminent, I believe that was a word that I used and the proviso from what I've been told from people at Newcastle and elsewhere. But yeah, Hopkinson, as George said, barring anything dramatically changing, we expect it to be David Hopkinson. But until it's done, it isn't done. And I mean, the argument the PIF and even senior people at Newcastle make is that it's about getting the right appointment, and things take a long time with PIF, process driven, those words that we've got used to. And I know other executive positions at Newcastle previously have taken up to 12 months to get sorted. CEO is arguably one of the two or three most important positions at the club alongside the head coach and the sporting director. If it takes a long time and they eventually get the right person who's going to be there for a number of years, same with the sporting director position, you can say there's a sort of justification for that. But I also think this, given the personal circumstances that Darren Eales has been going through, I think it is far from ideal that it has taken this long. Yeah. I feel very much for him that he had to work. He worked for the club and continued to work for the club, but really he shouldn't have been in that position. So sporting director-wise, to add to that as well, we believe that Ross Wilson is, or understand as he is the person who Newcastle want. That still isn't done either. When exactly that will be sorted, he may have a period of notice, not entirely sure, but they're the two people, as things stand, we expect to be filling those positions. But until it's done, it's not done. So yeah, imminent.
Yeah, fair play. Sean's also asked about a stadium update as well. That's all gone a bit quiet, hasn't it?
So on that front, the update is there is no update. But there's been a lot of...
At least it's not imminent, Chris.
There's been a lot of sort of soft deadlines, a lot of claims over the course of the last few months that we were going to hear something in May, then we were going to hear something in June, then it was going to be July. And basically, the situation as it stands, this was... From my understanding from conversations over the course of the last few months and including with certain people in Newcastle, is that after, I think it was March, that PIF officials, including Yasser Ramayan, were across, and they were at Matfin Hall in Northumberland for a sort of away day where there was a lot of presentations, including presentations on the stadium. And those presentations included the building of a new stadium, on Leeses Park and also the expansion of St. James's Park. Now, neither of those with definitive plans of this is exactly what we would do, but those two options were presented. Now, there are certain people within the club who strongly favour the new stadium, but as it is put to me, is both options remain live, and they are now basically with PIF and the Rubens, and they are deciding which one to go with. And the reason why it's part of the reason why it's taken so long is, if you think about how long it's taken for a CEO, for a decision which is going to cost hundreds of millions of pounds, regardless of which one it is.
Yep.
And as things stand, they've only done a certain amount of groundwork as to exactly what each of them would look like, because they want to then, once they decide on what they're going to do, have a quote-unquote consultation process with the fan advisory board and with supporters as to what precisely they do. So there's going to be a commitment of hundreds of millions of pounds, large parts of it coming from the ownership, without knowing exactly what the outcome is and what the guaranteed returns would necessarily be. So there's been a lot of questions back and forth, and as things stand, there hasn't yet been a decision taken from the ownership. That was as of a fortnight ago. I haven't heard anything has changed in the last couple of weeks. And I also think that probably makes sense. You would want the CEO in place before that decision's made.
Okay, let's crack on. We'll have a quick break. And we've got some more questions to go through. So, are we likely to see Lewis Miley sold next summer due to the ability to gain the highest bookable fee? And a bonus question, which of our current academy slash youth prospects beyond Miley seems likeliest to break into the first team this season? And that's from George, an emailer, not George Colkin sitting next to me.
Well, I mean, in terms of the first bit, I truly hope not. I mean, I don't think that's part of Newcastle's strategy. We had to do a little bit in The Athletic this last week about Newcastle's kind of one to watch. It felt a bit of a cheat to mention Lewis Miley again, but I did. And a couple of reasons why I did that. Firstly, you know, you saw in pre-season, I think that he's kind of coming back to the kind of performances that he showed when he made his breakthrough into the team. He looks like a proper physical specimen now. He's still got the face of a cherub, but he has really filled out. He looked hungry and aggressive, and certainly internally they're talking about him and wanting him to kind of make an impact. It was a difficult season for him last time. He had to come back from a couple of injuries, including breaking his metatarsal. And, you know, he just couldn't get through that incredible midfield three that Newcastle have. So, but internally, you never thought about letting him leave on loan this summer. Certainly no thought about letting him leave on a permanent basis. There's been a kind of few little rumblings around clubs possibly showing an interest in him. But they want him to be here and they want him to make an impact. They're talking about him as a future elite player. That's the kind of phrase that they've used about him. But you know, they absolutely love him. I mean, that would be heartbreaking, the idea of him moving. You know, they see him, they talk about him being a player that they will build the team around for years to come. That's certainly the big idea.
Yeah, I mean, on the other question about the youth product potentially coming through, Sung Soo Park or Park Soo Sung, I can't remember. Apologise for my ignorance, a South Korean name, whether you meant to, which name you meant to go around. I know it's Park at second mention, so Park, they are very excited by. He's really made a big impression since he's come in. I'll be honest, I thought it, like Cordero, he'd probably go straight out on loan. He hasn't. He was involved in the group, and Eddie Howe and his coaching staff have been very impressed by what he's had to offer. Now, partly that is to do with that he's also got a greater opportunities because Newcastle don't have a centre forward, so therefore Anthony Gordon's playing through the middle, and that means a shift around in terms of depth of options elsewhere. But they have really liked what they've seen from him. Sean Neave scored for the under-21s again the other day, but two games in a row. He's doing very well. They still do really like him. I know I've mentioned him before, but also Leo Shaha and Trevon Sanusi. I'm not sure there's anyone beyond those, maybe Anthony Munder in midfield, beyond those who really, as things stand, look like they're going to necessarily make that step up. But there is far more cooperation and collaboration between the under 21 setup and the first team, which is why they're getting greater opportunities. So hopefully a few more will get it given the amount of fixtures Newcastle have this year.
We have signed someone else in the middle. Jacob Ramsey, is he the guy to get us 7+ goals from midfield? I'm sorry, the name for this one's been lost in the ether as well. George, what do we think?
Well, I mean, so again, to make that same point about Lewis Miley, he's got a big task on his hands to get into Newcastle's midfield, because you're talking about Tonali, you're talking about Guimarães, you're talking about Joe Linton, you're talking about three exceptional midfield players. So to score 7 goals, you're going to have to, you know, presumably play quite a lot of games.
Yeah.
And so that is not a guarantee. There have been a couple of seasons in the not too distant past when Ramsey scored 6 goals, I think, the 6 Premier League goals. But for the last couple of seasons, he's only scored 1, I think, per season. So, yeah, for both of those reasons, I think that's asking a lot. It, you know, he does offer a different profile to the other midfielders, you know, similar perhaps to Willock, possibly. Chris, I'm looking at you for backup on this, but I think he has that kind of profile, the, you know, the kind of player who can get the ball up the pitch, can carry a team up the field, you know. So different to Sean Longstaff, different to Lewis Miley, you know, having those options is really important. I think it'd be asking a lot for him to get 7 goals.
I think it would, but I think Newcastle think he has the capacity for his numbers to massively increase. The sort of breakthrough 6 months he had early on under Unai Emery, before he had quite a lot of injury issues, mainly with his foot and metatarsal problems. He did score, I think it was a combination of double figures, goals and assists combined, he contributed. But he is seen as a left-sided number 8 primarily, or left winger that side. So actually they've replaced Longstaff, who was more on the right, with someone more on the left hand side. He will be competing with Joe Linton and Joe Willock for that position. Joe Willock's he's in the final 2 years of his contract. He's obviously injured at the moment, won't leave this window, but I think his long term future is uncertain. Ramsey, I think, in some ways is seen as almost like Willock's successor.
Yeah.
Not that they've written off Joe Willock yet, but someone who can, as George said, offer something similar, can score goals, can play 1-2s and run in behind, can be athletic. He maybe has lost a little bit of that over the last couple of years at Villa, with not being consistently in the position that he wants, or having stop-start because of injuries. But they have seen enough in him. They tried they made an inquiry in January 2024. He's someone they really like and have done long-term, and they believe under Eddie Howe, like every single other player they've signed this summer, that there is huge room for improvement still, and goals is definitely one of them.
Yeah, I think there's, as well, with the additional fixtures in the Champions League, there's going to be a lot more potential for rotation as well, isn't there? And when you've got Joe Linton charging around already on a yellow card, you need to swap him out for someone.
And his injury record, he has had.
Yeah, of course. Well. Yeah, absolutely. Mark has asked, would love Bilal El-Kanous as well. He would give us that technical advanced midfielder that we've needed for years. Any chance that may happen, Chris?
Newcastle did ask the question in terms of trying to find out details around him. They do like him. He's seen as a slightly different profile to Jacob Ramsey. But the release clause was slightly higher than I think was reported publicly, and they ended up going for Ramsey rather than El-Kanous. They do like him, and he is someone under consideration, but it's unlikely Newcastle will sign another midfielder now they've signed Ramsey by the close of play. The focus is very much on striking out, unless they get an injury elsewhere. I think it's unlikely in this window.
Jamie wants to know if the date and time of each fixture will be known immediately after the draw for the Champions League, or if there will be some horse trading from the broadcasters. Do we know anything about this?
Does Jamie think that we are Google? Because I can assure him that we're not. But yeah. I have just had a look on Google. And so what happens, the draw is made on the 28th, and those fixtures come out. But no, in terms of the actual dates and times, they then give themselves 3 days afterwards. They say that by Sunday the 31st of August, the exact match dates and kickoff times are then confirmed. So there will be a couple of days afterwards.
Can you imagine how terrifying it would be if you asked Alexa or Siri and just had your voice, George Culkin's voice, come back?
I think that would be reassuring.
Just sort of like speaking down to everyone, just like a sort of...
But wouldn't you get, before he answered, wouldn't you get...
I'm not Google.
Well, I mean, you would get me saying I don't know, but I think I would do it in a very, it's like, yeah, yeah. I mean,
in
I don't
a very condescending tone.
I don't know the answer to your question, but I'm going to say it in a very reassuring manner.
Fair play. There is a chance that we're going to do a little podcast reaction for the Champions League draw as well, so you need to keep your ears and your eyes open for that. Thanks to Chris Thompson as well from Essex for his lovely message after he saw WOF collecting some fish and chips in Belford recently, and he's certain that he boshed a battered sausage, which is very on brand for you, Chris, isn't it?
Can you confirm or deny?
Do you bosh a battered sausage?
I can confirm it, but my family don't know that I did that in the car before I took the fish and chips back.
That's unbelievable.
Oh, man. Chris Woffin is secret meat. Hiding it from his loved ones.
Wow, that's I did not realise it, so I've been spotted doing that.
We've pulled back the curtain on Chris's shame, haven't we?
Because I didn't. I rang ahead and ordered, and I was like, oh, I'll just add a sausage on, and I'll go. I'll go and pick it up. It's all right. I'll go and get it.
This man's
doing? He's eating sausages in the car again on his own.
This man's cholesterol. It's
incredible.
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. Right then. Any emails, please send them in to podonthetyne@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, X and Blue Sky, @podonthetyne. We'll say it again. It's a great time to rate and review us on your podcast outlet of choice. So get on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you listen, and give us the full treatment. That's just about it for now, chaps. Thank you very much. I've enjoyed this. It's been nice.
No, thank you. I've very much enjoyed it as well. Thank you again to Gosforth Civic Theatre. We will 100%. Certainly be back, hopefully for live shows soon. And yeah, if you've enjoyed this content, if you want these sort of question answers going forward, if you want more of them, if you want them a different format, as I say, please give us feedback.
Yes, so a big thank you as well to everybody who's asked these questions. Great fun to do. The reason we've actually done this as a separate show is because we got so many questions, and it's the kind of thing that we can do now in this brave new world of ours. So, really exciting. So thanks again for that. And look forward to our next main pod.
Yes, thank you again. Just echo George's sentiments. Thank you to everybody who sent in questions. That's about it for now. Take care, look after yourselves, and we'll be back on Thursday. From everybody at Pod on the Tyne, goodbye.